That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, cranberries. There are precisely 2 days a year we eat cranberries, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we're right in between those holidays. So let's get the scoop on cranberries. Leo Cacunes, an owner-grower on Cape Cod who runs Cranberry Bog Tours, is here to talk about the little red fruit that sauces our tables this season. Plus, show descriptions. You sent us log lines that try to sum up this podcast. Good luck on making 2 plus 2 equal 11. I'm Adam Felber, the man who every week tries to get the conversational juice out of the topical berries we set on the podcast table. And now, please welcome the woman who turns those topical berries into an ocean spray of tartness that never gets bogged down much. Paula Poundstone!
Hey,
you guys.
Welcome, Paula.
Well, thank you so much. Hey, Adam, and thanks to tonight's house band, Raymond Horton from Floyd Knobs, Indiana, on euphonium, bass trombone, and tuba. Hey, we had a great time on our Zoom party with Stephanie Lundgren, who was the winner of our vocabulary contest, I don't know, a few weeks back.
That's right. And so we get together with Stephanie and we set up to 100 of her friends. And, you know, we set that as an outside limit, not thinking that there'd be that many friends. But it turned out that Stephanie's involved in the Portland choir scene in Portland, Oregon. So she had a lot of friends there.
Yeah. Not only that, she's in, I think she was in more than one choir. I've forgotten, like the various friends of hers that I talked to on the Zoom screen, they all, I would say, well, how do you know Stephanie? And they would say, well, you know, we sang in the, you know, in the Portland women's choir, and then also in the Portland doubles choir, and then in the choir.
Yeah.
There were a lot of choirs.
yeah, apparently the story at root of it was that Stephanie had been in the choir. And the choir that she'd been in and met most of those people had broke up.
You know what? I just had a really brilliant idea. There should be a reality show about a choir. Isn't that a good idea?
OMG. It's a great idea.
Yeah. Okay.
And they all have to live in a house together?
No, they don't have to. No, I don't think they have to live.
And they all wear bikinis most of the time. And Speedos.
No, I just think that there will be a lot.
And they have to give each other a rose?
No, okay, go ahead. No. I think that there's going to be a lot of drama in the world of choir, you know. Someone singing off key or something, and then everyone shunning them, that sort of thing. Adam, I listen to some other podcasts. I hate to cheat on us like that, but I do. One that I listen to is...
What is it, Paula? Am I not attractive to you anymore?
No, you are. I swear it. You
are. Do I not give you what you need in the podcast?
But here's the thing. So I listen to a really good podcast that's Al Hunt and James Carville. And they're always saying, like, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. You know, it's very important that you subscribe. Yeah. And so sometimes I come on our podcast and I say, yeah, people should subscribe. But I have to be honest, I don't know what it means.
You don't?
No. Does it mean the bills just keep piling up like when you used to get good housekeeping?
No, this is not like those kids who come to your door selling you magazines. It's not like there's hidden costs. I think that's why some people don't subscribe. But what subscribe means for podcasts is that it just automatically goes to your phone every week and sends you a little notice saying, hey, this podcast is ready to listen to. That's it.
Oh, that's nice.
Doesn't cost anything. Yeah, and the reason that you tell people to subscribe is that, you know, once they hit that subscribe button, they're just going to get our podcast every week.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Subscribe, you guys. Go ahead, subscribe. Go ahead.
is that our message? Okay.
Yeah. People should subscribe.
I agree.
Yeah. You know what I think of? When I think of subscribe, I do think of magazines. And when I think of magazines, I think of, even though I like to read Mother Jones magazine and I get it, the actual magazine. But when I think of magazines, I tend to think of the old Good Housekeeping magazine. And what I remember about it is that we used to, in our family room when we were watching television, we didn't want to hurt the furniture. And so we would take a Good Housekeeping magazine and put, you know, a glass on it. So all of my mother's magazines eventually had these big circles all over them. And I remember when Ally McGraw had made Love Story, which, by the way, my mother wouldn't let me see. She wouldn't let me see Love Story, and she wouldn't let me see Andromeda Strain. I think she thought they both had sex in them. But
she probably didn't like Al Gore.
Why?
Well, Love Story's about Al Gore, isn't it?
Is Love Story about Al Gore? Where do you get that idea?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's about him. Well-known fact.
No, it isn't. Where did you get that idea?
I don't know where I got that idea, but he was like one of the characters in it or something. It was kind of his story.
I don't think so, Adam, but...
Oh, absolutely.
No. No, it's not about Al Gore.
Absolutely about Al Gore.
All right, but here's the thing. So when Ally McGraw made Love Story, she was on the cover. It was either Women's Day or Good Housekeeping. I can't remember anymore. But she was wearing a crocheted snood, and we kept putting the glasses on the magazine. And so she had these big circles on her face. And then I met her many, many, many years later, and she was very nice, by the way. And I was so relieved to see that those circles had cleared up.
Yeah.
I can, hard to go through life.
Came around to that.
With those big circles on your life, especially after she used to date Al Gore. Where the hell? You must have been in like first grade, and kids were saying Love Stories about Al Gore.
No, I thought that it's something that we all knew and we'd all laugh about it. But what happened was back in the 90s, Al Gore basically said that Love Story was based on him and his experiences at Yale. And then the author of Love Story denied that, but then it was kind of like it had something to, you know, that scene was definitely what he was writing about. It was a big thing. It was 20 years ago, but it was a big thing at the time. It was in like all the papers.
I don't remember that. What paper was it in? Name one paper. You're making an argument right now the way Trump makes arguments. Everybody read about it. You did. I did. Everyone knows about it.
I will bet you anything that Land Romo, our Starburns producer, is right now Googling it and can back us up.
Land?
I am.
And I am too. I never heard that ever, and I remember the magazine cover.
Well, you Googlers, Google Love Story Al Gore. It'll pop up right away. It'll be in lots of respectable newspapers. You'll see.
Well, in December 15th of 1997, the headline in LA Times is Gore apologizes for confusion over Love Story.
There you go. I think Adam's gone mental.
Wow.
No, that's exactly what I was saying.
It was a thing. It was a thing.
It turned out the confusion was that Blue Lagoon was about Al Gore.
I highly doubt that.
Yeah, the Brooke Shields movie was about Al Gore.
No, okay.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'm telling you, that's...
The headline in The Independent is, Love Story Ends in Tears for Al Gore.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a weird time.
I guess.
It was, but imagine. It was in like every paper. Every paper covered it.
Oh, every paper didn't cover it. Now you've gone too far.
Name a paper that existed in 1997 and Land Roma will find you a headline about Al Gore and Love Story.
The paper he just mentioned wasn't even a well-known paper. What about...
All right, Land, how about the New York Times?
New York Times is the first. The second is LA Times. And the third is Chicago Tribune.
There! It's in three.
You know, let's move on to another fact that I'm sure has not escaped our listeners now, which is that Tony Anita Hall is out with a hamstring pull or something, right?
Yeah.
She's under the weather. She'll be back soon. Since we don't have Tony here and it's time to go around the horn, let's start instead of in Sherman Oaks in Highland Park, California. Land Romo, what's new with you?
Yay, Land.
All right, just to fill in the details of the Land Romo biopic, besides being our Starburns producer and an all-around great guy, Land was in our Thanksgiving pageant the other week, and he's also in the French Trump press conference every Friday as reporter Tony Romo. We just love Land.
Yes, we just love Land, and he's been with us since we landed almost a year ago at Starburns Audio. And Land, you've had to sit and listen to us a lot. What can you tell us about your life right now?
My life is locked up just like everybody else, but I get to spend most of my days working, and that work is listening to really funny people be very funny all day. So that is always a silver lining. It makes the day go much, much better.
Oh, that is. Starburns has a lot of podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Starburns has a lot of podcasts. Yes.
Yeah. A lot of comedy podcasts?
Mostly comedy podcasts. So yeah. It's always fun. It's always fun.
I can feel the competitive hairs on the back of my neck rising.
No. We're one of those podcasts, Paula. He means us.
No, I don't think
he did. Yeah, I definitely mean you. Paula, we spend so much time together. It's definitely, you're definitely my number one.
Oh, there. Thank you, Land.
Now, Land, you took some sort of trip today, though, didn't you?
I did. I went just outside of downtown Los Angeles to get COVID tested today, and it was kind of a nightmare.
What?
I get COVID tested just to kind of know where I'm at from time to time because I'm in a bubble kind of with my parents. We don't live together, but I don't see anybody other than them. So okay. I just do it just to be sure. I don't go to the market. I don't do all those things. So I'm pretty safe, but I still want to know.
Right.
So I went down today, and usually the place that I go is a drive-through testing center, which is really quick. It feels really safe and it's really easy. And today when I pulled up, it was a park and walk-up testing center, which I wasn't really that excited about. But it didn't seem like that many people were there. So I walked up and got my little test kit and asked them, you know, do I go back to my car to do this? And they motioned that I would just go around this little corner and that's where my test would happen. And as I start walking around this corner, I'm hearing all of these coughs. And the testing center around this corner were just lines of people coughing into the air so they could swab the inside of their mouth.
Wait,
it was crazy.
Why do you have to cough to swab the inside of your mouth?
I guess to bring up the what do they call them that gets airborne.
Oh, the droplets?
Yeah, the droplets.
Oh.
So everyone's standing in these lines facing the walls, just coughing into the air, ready to swab their mouth.
That seems completely wrong. Did you do it?
Very wrong. No. So I grabbed my little test kit and I said, well, I'm going to go do this in my car. And he said, we don't do that anymore. And I just kept walking, went to my car, did my test and then, you know, dropped it off. There's like big trash bins that you kind of drop off your specimen in. So, I mean, they didn't know where I was doing it anyway, but I just was, oh, it was horrible. It was like it was horrible.
Wow.
Well, you know why they stopped at that location? They stopped doing the drive-ups because people were driving through too fast. And the swab was going all the way to the back of their throat and out through their spine. And a lot of injuries. A lot of injuries using that method. So they stopped.
But it sounds like they're just mass distributing COVID at this point, though.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, that's definitely weird.
It felt like a COVID factory is really what I was thinking. It just would...
Yeah.
There were people in line just coughing their entire way through the line. And I just, it was just so horrible. I'm a little traumatized by it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it doesn't. It doesn't sound good.
Well, if I didn't have it before.
Congratulations. All right. Well, on that.
Are you sure? Wait, Land, are you sure that you went to a testing center and it wasn't a starter kit they gave you? A COVID starter kit? Yeah.
That could be it, Paul.
You got to read the fine print, man. It's so
I got to read the fine print.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Does the kid have, like, you know, kid-friendly letters saying, my first COVID?
With the C backwards or something.
And a little engineer's cap. Yeah. Well, let's turn our attention from Highland Park and go all the way up to the Simi Valley, where lurks Captain Crinkle, your manager, my friend, our producer, Bonnie Burns. How are you, Bonnie?
Well, I'm really good, and I'd like to add, I found out a little information about Love Story, which
Bonnie, love were you Googling while we were talking?
Well, I might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, love is never having to say you're sorry. Nobody brought that up. But
No. It wasn't really a great expression, I don't think.
No, it isn't.
Okay, so is the screenplay writer's name Siegel, right? Eric Siegel?
I believe he wrote the novel.
No, what I read was he wrote the screenplay first, and then they tried to pressure him into writing the novel.
Oh, okay, cool. So okay. it was definitely Eric Siegel. I think he spelled it E-R-E-R-I-C-H.
S-E-G-A-L. No. You're full of correct information tonight.
Wait, what are you talking about? I was spelling Eric.
Oh, Eric. Shit, I thought I had a thing to, like, rake you about.
This is like, okay, you know what, you guys? Someday when we have COVID when COVID is under control and people can meet in large groups again, I would like you guys to go into business, maybe working with corporations about how to listen to one another. Because the dynamic between Bonnie Burns and Adam Felber is so priceless. I was spelling Eric. That's not how you spell Siegel.
We don't always do. It is hard. It's hard to hear over the connection, but we don't always do that.
My point was that he spells his name with an H.
Okay. Anyway, that's not my point.
Siegel.
You're right. Okay. E-R-I-C-H.
It's Siegel.
My point is this.
No.
Okay. My point is this. Here's the point. Okay, Al Gore was roommates with Tommy Lee Jones at Harvard. This is Eric Siegel's interview with the New York Times, and this is what he said. He said that he based the preppy Harvard jockey player Oliver Barrett IV on Tommy Lee Jones. The only part he based on Al Gore was the character's controlling father and the feeling that his family was pressuring him to follow in his dad's footsteps.
Okay, I read
kind
something.
Kind of a big part of a character.
I read something that said that the Ally McGraw character was almost entirely based on Al Gore. I don't know if that's true.
That's even where the name came from.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the haircut.
It's spelled, by the way, he's He's spelling it with an H, so it's Hal Gore.
You know, that really tracks because in 1970, Al Gore was got his head stuck in a coffee can.
Is that
and
true?
He ended up with this big and he ended up with this big circle on his face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. And he used to wear a snood to cover up the scars. I remember this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have this really great friend who...
Cher? Is it Cher?
No, it's not Cher. Anyway, you know, he like I used to go to musicals with him and he'd hum the whole score and he wrote a book on the Kennedy weddings. And once he was like in London, I forget what restaurant, but a famous restaurant. And there was a Kennedy there. And then after he left, my friend, his name was Jay. I won't say his last name. He went over and he took the linen napkin that was on the table and he saved that. Okay. So we were at some political event and there was like a crowd and Al Gore was standing in front of us and Jay poked his butt with his index finger, and then he said to me, spongy.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Bonnie, I don't know what it was you had intended to say to us today, but that beats it.
Because I had a story about my dogs, and I'm sitting here going, this really beats the story about the dogs.
But is it too late for Hal Gore to sue for assault? That's terrible. You don't. No one should poke anyone's butt. That just. It doesn't matter who. I don't care if it's a vice president. We don't do that. That's not good. Did you say that to your friend? Did you say, well, don't do that?
No, you reminded me of the last part. Then Al Gore turned around like really fast.
I would think.
What happened? And my friend Jay just stood there with like this little sort of look smiley on his face like, beats me.
Oh, my gosh. You know? Okay, back up to the part where you said he wrote a book about the Kennedy wedding, which, by the way,
yeah,
for all those Googlers out there, could pretty much give away who you're talking about.
Oh,
but,
shit. Now I got to Google yay. That. And but, see
my
if
question
he comes
is,
up.
a book about the wedding? How stimulating
yeah,
could
know.
That possibly be?
Even when he told me, I was thinking, really, there's an audience for that? But I think it had pictures with it. I'm sure it was a wonderful book. He's very talented.
I've already Googled it. I see it.
You're too busy.
No, oh, my gosh.
It's not going to be very mysterious for people Googling that because the book is, in fact, entitled Kennedy Weddings.
You yeah. found it already? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Really?
Bye.
Yes, I found it, too.
Paula, take us away. Do you have a word?
Oh, my gosh,
you have a
Adam.
Vocabulary word?
All right, Adam. Yes. I have a word. It's FIE. F-I-E. It's an exclamation. It was used a long time ago to express disgust or outrage. But there is so much disgust and outrage now. I think we should bring it back. Here, I'll use it. Well, that's it in the sentence. Let's give it a home in our brains by giving it a home in my vocabulary song. Here we go. Here it is. This week's word is FIE. It's an exclamation used to express disgust or outrage. FIE. How can Donald Trump still be on the stage? Last week's word was Putinesca. It's a noun that means pasta sauce made with tomatoes, garlic, olives, anchovies, etc. Said to have been devised by prostitutes as one which could quickly be cooked between clients' visits. Quick, mate the sauce and get back to the toss. That's Putinesca. The week before that, the word was perdurable. It's an adjective that means enduring continuously, permanent. The cat's peed in the heating vent. Going back before that, the word was piety. It's a noun that means conventional belief that is accepted without thinking. Just keep your tiny blood of Christ glasses clinking. And not long ago we had specious. It's an adjective that means seemingly reasonable or plausible, but actually wrong. I remember words because I put them in this song. Let's never forget Gallimaufry, which I pronounced wrong until nobody James Hyder corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumbler, a medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do.
Yeah.
Yay. Wow.
It's a gold hit.
Fine.
Fie!
Fie, I say. Where is my napkin?
You know, Groucho Marx said, well, art is art, isn't it? Still, on the other hand, water is water, and east is east, and west is west, and if you take cranberries and stew them like applesauce, they taste much more like prunes than rhubarb does. Now you tell me what you know. Coming up, we'll tell you what we know about cranberries on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Hey guys, it's Adam, and tonight is January 3rd, and I am picking Giannis Antetokounmpo to score less than 36 points and James Harden to score more than 16. Why? Because I like beards. Am I putting a lot of money on this? I am not, because I'm not really a gambler, but I am having a lot of fun with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, who I would lose to, you pick more or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, or in my case, not. So I don't bet a lot. With the basketball season here, you can now pick combo projections across football and basketball from the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include 2 or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce had a 10.5 combo of 3 points made, plus receptions. Do I get that? Kind of a little bit. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, that player is rebooted. So, it's like an insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. And then drop by and see how I did with the Greek Freak and Harden again on January 3rd. My hopes are not that high. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
On this day in unremarkable history, Mel Blanc's mother said, "Don't you talk to me in that voice."
Thank you, house band Raymond Horton. Paula, it's cranberry season.
Yeah, it's cranberry season. It's very short, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And every year I have all sorts of questions about cranberries.
That's funny because I have a lot of questions about cranberries too, and I love cranberries. When we have a man on the phone who can answer all our cranberry inquiries, Leo and Andrea Kakunis operate the largest organic cranberry bog on Cape Cod. Leo and his wife have been running their farm for 20 years, and their cranberry bog tours educate visitors about the cranberry business. Please welcome Leo Kakunis.
Yay!
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Sit down, everybody, sit down. Relax. Thank you. Thank you guys very much for having me. This is a lot of fun. I enjoy talking about the cranberry business.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you're here. All right, so, Leo, one time in my home ec class, when I was in Ephraim Curtis Junior High in Sudbury, Massachusetts, for reasons that I've never been clear about, the teacher showed us a little movie about a cranberry bog, which I had never even heard that term before. And years later, I realized she was probably hungover because it wasn't connected to anything we had been talking about in class. Just one day, she showed a film about a cranberry bog. That's my only exposure to the business. So, Leo, how do you grow cranberries?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people use the term, and we use the term in the industry, cranberry bog. But the actual surface of the cranberry bog itself is really not a peaty, wet surface. Mm-hmm. A cranberry bog, believe it or not, is not a wet environment. The cranberry vines themselves, indigenously, they really grew on the banks of rivers, just far enough away from the water, from the running river or lake, so that their root system was dry, yet close enough so they could run runner roots out to the water to get their nutrients. And basically, this is how the commercial cranberry bogs are today. So the term bog is kind of, it's not really a great explanation on how they grow. But the vines themselves, they like to root themselves in sand. And the bog is created with about 2 or 3 inches of sand on the top. Below that, you have about a foot of peat, which holds the water and the nutrients. And below that, you have a layer of clay. And the layer of clay really is there to hold the water when we flood the bog. Because as you know, Paula, coming from this area, if you take a glass of water and you dump it in the sand, that water just dissipates. It goes right down to the ground. In Massachusetts, the soil is very sandy. So what we have to do is put clay down as a bowl, if you will, a basin, to actually hold the water itself.
So you flood the place with water, and then the water just kind of sinks in. And other than that, it doesn't look boggy at all, is what you're saying, right?
Exactly. The grower itself now controls bringing the water on and off for specific uses.
Well, how then, Leo, do you explain the guys in the, I think, wasn't it the Ocean Spray commercial or some sort of spritzer drink or something that used to wear those big pants in the water and they were supposedly,
Do you wear the big pants, Leo?
I absolutely wear the big pants. That's kind of, when I do my tours here, I always use the term, which a lot of people use today, as we all know, fake news when you're looking at that video. And it's not all fake. Obviously, we do use water. And as I explained before, the bog itself has got that clay base.
Sure.
So when we bring water onto the bog, either pump it on or let it run in through a stream, we fill the bog up. However, it very rarely is deeper than maybe a foot deep. So those waders are really overkill. You know,
we can
actually do it with knee-high boots. You don't need the waders.
But there is a time, a brief period of time, where it's a genuine bog. I mean, there's like a foot of water there.
Normally 4 times a year. Once in the winter, we flood it to protect the bog from the cold so that the vines don't freeze. Mm-hmm. We flood the bog again in the spring if you're an organic grower, to take away and kill the bugs and the weeds. And then we flood it again in harvest time to move the berries from point A to point B when we're trying to collect the berries up for harvesting. And then every now and then a grower will do what's called a trash flood, which will flood the bog again to get the dead leaves and any debris off the bog, help clean up the bog.
Tell me how that works, where you move the berries with the water.
That is, Paula, that's the most asked about scene here on the farm. And believe it or not, that is the most rarest scene to see. And the way I usually explain that to the people that take the tour is that here we actually have a 7-acre bog. It's 7 acres. It's one big cleared area of land. Now, in a water harvest situation, I would put the water on that bog on Monday morning. Tuesday, we run a machine around it, which has a big reel in the front. And as that reel turns, it brushes the cranberries off the vine. And then Wednesday morning, my guys show up. All the berries are floating. We get out there with our waders on. We corral that beautiful scene that you see on that commercial. We corral up all those berries in a big circle. We get a berry pump now, and we put this big hose in there, and it just sucks those berries right out of the bog. So by Wednesday, maybe noon or 1 o'clock, that iconic sight of those cranberries floating is gone.
Wow. So you're like a berry herder. You herd berries.
Exactly.
Leo, did you see City Slickers?
Yes, I did.
With Billy Crystal years ago.
Love
where they
that
go,
movie.
They go on the Dude Ranch. City Slickers 4 is going to take place in a cranberry bog.
They're going to yell, "Get along, little berries."
That's right. No. Yeah, get up there, cranberry. So you really could do the whole thing in a wading pool. It sounds like you're actually in a kiddie pool with waders on.
A lot of people are very upset when they don't see the cranberries floating. So what I tell them to do is buy about 4 or 5 pounds of cranberries from us. And when they get home, fill their bathtub up with about 4 or 5 inches of water, dump the cranberries in it, and have at it, baby. Have at it.
You'll let me know which of your visitors does that so that I can get in touch with them and ask for a loan.
You'll be surprised.
All right, is it hard to make a profit growing cranberries?
It's absolutely non-existent right now. Making a profit is the furthest thing of any cranberries grower's mind. In the last 10 years, the cranberry industry has gone down so quickly and so bad that majority now, the small cranberry growers are going out of business daily.
Oh, why? That's terrible.
Yes, it is.
But if you're not hoping to make at least some profit, then what would the goal be as a cranberry grower?
The ones that are in it still now, like myself, are here because they love the lifestyle. They love the just being out, being a farmer. And quite frankly, we're just holding on to get through the rest of our lives. But there is no 25-year-olds knocking on my door to buy my 50 acres, believe me. The only people that want to buy my 50 acres are people who want to develop it into housing. There's no young people are looking to get into the cranberry business.
Well, you know what? After this podcast drops, that could all change.
Yeah.
Now that we're describing the glamour of it.
Have them look me up. I'll be happy to sell it to them and give them some advice.
Oh, you would?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it a family business? How did you get into the business?
No, I actually grew up on a farm, and I just loved it. And as I went through my career and graduated college and moved on and started a business in the construction field, the yearning to go back to farming was just real strong. And looked into cranberry bogs because I liked Cape Cod. I certainly loved this area. And to purchase land here on Cape Cod, extremely expensive. I guess you guys in California probably have known this for a long time too. But, to buy an acre of land on Cape Cod, you're looking at, $250,000, $300,000 for an acre of land. So get into farming, forget about it. However, at the time, 20 plus years ago now, almost 25 years ago now, cranberry bogs were attainable. You could buy them. And my wife and I decided to give it a shot. And here we are.
Well, I still don't understand this idea that it doesn't profit you anyway. That doesn't make any sense to me. That's not a good business plan, Leo.
It's not a good business plan, Paul. But you know what? No agriculture is a good business plan today. And again, I grew up in agriculture. I grew up in a pig business. And quite frankly, when big business got involved in raising pork, the small pork farmers went out of business. Mm-hmm. And that's the exact same thing that happens in anything to do surrounding agriculture.
So I don't know about California, Big Cranberry is driving you out, Big Cranberry?
Absolutely. 10, 12 years ago, I was getting commercially, let's not talk about organic. Let's just talk conventional, because that's the ones that have taken a big hit. Conventional cranberry growers were getting 80 cents to maybe a dollar a pound to sell their cranberries commercially now. Commercially, I'm talking about sending them to the juice makers.
Right.
And big business saw that and got into it and started purchasing large tracts of land in Wisconsin and converting them to upscale modern cranberry bogs. And quite frankly, their production was so great that the supply and demand, we're going to go back to your high school teacher.
All right.
Supply and demand affects everything. When the supply of cranberries just increased exponentially and the demand stayed flat, what happens? The price gets driven down.
Right.
So right now, just to give you a picture, here we are. Let's fast forward 12 years later. The average conventional cranberry grower right now is getting less than anywhere from 8 cents to 12 to 15 cents a pound.
Oh, my God.
And it has been calculated out that it's a cost about 30 cents a pound for a grower to actually grow them.
Leo, have you done any experiments making a vaccine out of cranberries? Because that would really bring in a lot of money. And the other thing is, I know Big Cranberry has been trying to promote urinary tract infections.
The urinary tract thing is great. It has helped us out an awful lot. Not the disease, but the cure has helped us a lot. People who do drink a lot of the juice because of that, it's good for you. But Paula, you say it in jest, but we do have, the cranberry industry does have a group of scientists working on all aspects of the cranberry to try to find some other medical benefit. In fact, we're even going to the point that we're looking at the leaves and what I referred to earlier in the interview is the trash that we float off the bog, because believe it or not, they're finding some kind of antibodies in those leaves, and we're hoping that, you know, some kind of extract may come out of that, you know.
Boy,
but they've been doing it for years.
Won't you kick yourself for having considered that trash all these years? It's like, it's going to be the same thing for me, Leo, when they find that cat urine is actually, fights the virus.
Yeah,
I'm just
going to
feel
Paula,
like an idiot.
Well, you know, I'm still a big one for novelty. You know, we sell more metal muffins with cranberries in them now for wedding gifts and, birthday presents and stuff like that. People love them. So
that's fun
nothing
stuff.
Nothing like a metal muffin covered with fresh cranberries.
There really is nothing like that. Now, when visiting New England in 1663, John Josselyn wrote about cranberries. The Indians and English use them much, boiling them with sugar for sauce to eat with their meat, and it is a delicious sauce. Stay tuned to find out more about that very American fruit. The Cat of the Week is Sketch from Barnet, Vermont. Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Go, Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why do you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinevo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back with Leo Kakunis. Leo, we started to touch on the history of the cranberry, and you want to get to that?
I would love to, because of the fact I'm proud that my cranberry bog is located in Harwich, Massachusetts, which is out on the arm of the Cape Cod. Everyone knows Cape Cod as being kind of the shaped like an arm. I'm right at the elbow, and that is actually Harwich, Massachusetts, and the neighboring towns of Brewster and Dennis, because no one's really quite sure where the first commercial cranberry bog was actually, which one it was. So if you're from Brewster, you'll hear people say it was Brewster. Dennis says it's them, but I'm from Harwich, so I say it's Harwich.
It's definitely Harwich.
It's down there. You go. But I just want to clarify, you know, the Indians and the indigenous people here in the United States used cranberries for years, thousands of years. And the cranberries actually grow along the latitude all the way around the earth. You can get different varieties of cranberries. But the story goes, it was early 1800s, around 1815, 1820. There was a devastating hurricane that happened in the Bahamas, and it wiped out the lime crop. And even back then, in the early 1800s, people knew that the cranberries had a great medicinal antibody that helped fight scurvy. So right here in the town of Harwich, Captain Hall, who was a ship captain, took wooden barrels, loaded them up with cranberries, and put them on his ships, and he went out to the ports in Boston and New York and even down as far as the Bahamas, and he sold them. And he became the first commercial cranberry grower because they went off so great. He came back. He started developing the cranberry bogs here, cultivating them, and making them an actual agricultural product. And the interesting thing you should know is that even today, cranberry growers refer to their crop as how many barrels we have sold. using because of the fact that's how they were originally sold by Captain Hall back in 1820. Is in a
barrel. How many cranberries in a barrel?
Well, because the government realized that some people's barrels are smaller than other people's barrels.
Barrels aren't standardized, is that right?
They are now.
Because we don't have any decent coopers.
That's right. Well, you know, the influx of the bushel and the peck, you've got to add a barrel to that now because you got two bushels, a couple of pecks, and you got a barrel. A barrel is 100 pounds. That's the standard weight. 100 pounds is a barrel of cranberries.
And how many barrels do you produce during a typical harvest on your...
Well, that's different for everyone. Again, we're organic, so our numbers run about a half to sometimes a third, in bad years, a quarter of what a conventional grower will grow. But you can figure around 10,000 pounds an acre. So on this 7-acre bog or 6-acre bog that you see here on the farm when you take the tour, you know, we can get 60,000 pounds of cranberries on a really good year.
Wow.
Average year, because we're organic, an average year, about 22 to 28,000 pounds.
So 100 barrels per acre?
100, pardon me? Yes. Yep.
Okay. We've got to come up with other ways that people can cook the cranberries. Like, have you thought of having them, like, you could put them on a stick and roast them over a fire?
Well, you know, there's the influx of the dried cranberry has really helped the industry quite a bit. When I was talking earlier about the flatness of the demand for cranberries, you have to remember that, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, cranberries were only sold around Thanksgiving and Christmas time, fresh cranberries, mm-hmm. anyhow. The juice market came in, and people, you know, drink juice all year long, and as Paula mentioned earlier, because of the medical reasons. But now we've developed a sweetened dried cranberry, and it's really helped the market a lot, get rid of a lot of its supply, and now people can enjoy the cranberry all year long by putting it in their cereal or their oatmeal and things like that. So as a product,
I love
it has
those.
Helped the industry.
I have them on my... I have them on my spinach salad. And you know what? I don't even use dressing anymore because just having the dried cranberries, I don't know, is enough.
Well, you're going to enjoy ours. We're very proud of ours. They are done a little bit different than some of the ones that are packaged by those bigger cranberry companies that you mentioned earlier.
Sure,
I won't say who they are, but... ours has done a little different, and it's our biggest seller here on the farm. And all year long, we ship them all over the world, actually, when people come and they get hooked on them.
You know, they say that blueberries are good for, what's that word they use with blueberries that you eat them for? Some sort of nutrient?
Antioxidants?
Antioxidants. And that helps with memory. Can cranberries help with my memory?
I forgot the question. What did you say? No, I'm just kidding.
I guess not.
I guess not. I've heard that, but I the problem with cranberries is I can eat them out of the barrel, if you will, when we're harvesting. I can just grab them and eating. But most people find them extremely bitter to eat too. They're not like a blueberry where you can eat them right off the vine. They do need to be processed, either be made into, like we talked about, drink, or the sweetened dried cranberry does an excellent job of being able to just eat them by the handfuls.
Yeah. How many people does it take to run your farm?
Well, unfortunately, it could take a lot, but right now it's just my wife and I. It is a very much a... like all agriculture, it has become mechanized. So you have to have a lot of equipment. Equipment replace bodies and men. In the old days, you know, a lot of stuff was done by hand. Today we have machinery that do a lot. So, but right now I could definitely use some help. Being an organic, weeds are a big problem here. Very, very difficult to find a real decent organic weed killer. So we're doing a lot of clipping and cutting and pulling.
Just flood the bog.
Just
flood the bog.
We do, but we have to get the water off to grow the cranberries, remember? They don't like growing in water.
And then those weeds come right back.
You know, I just want to, I would like to just hit on this organic thing because I've said it a number of times. And, you know, Paul, it doesn't really matter if you're talking about organic cranberries or anything that's grown organically, but your listeners need to know that if they're going to spend the money, make sure that they get a certified organic product. Because if it doesn't have that stamp, it's basically just some guy scamming you. There's no such thing as grown organically or grown by FAT and FE standards. It's either certified organic or it's conventionally owned. And we do pay, people do pay a little bit more money for a certified organic product, and they should make sure that they get that stamp and that seal.
So if the label says organic-y, that's not it.
Not it. You're wasting your money. You're throwing it out the window.
Okay.
Or organic-like.
Yeah, that's another one.
Well, organic-inspired.
Organically grown. Yeah, they'll say organically grown, but it doesn't have a stamp on it. Well, if it doesn't have a stamp on it, by whose standards is that organically grown? And that's why you need that USDA stamp.
Yeah, by Bob's standards. How did anybody ever figure out, do you think, how to grow cranberries? I mean, from the beginning.
Well, I think Mr. Hall, when you really go back and do some research on the history, you will find the majority of the stuff that Mr. Hall learned, not only from the native people here at the time, but then again, some people that moved here that just had the cranberries and liked cultivating them from themselves, because they used them and they ate them. They just didn't sell them commercially. And he watched what they did. There are some stories about after a hurricane here on Cape Cod, some sand was blown up on some of the bogs that bordered the lakes and the rivers. And the year after that happened, they had a bumper crop. And all of a sudden, people realized that, you know what? If you apply sand to the cranberries, you will get a better crop.
Wow.
You know, and another interesting thing, too, I just want to add before I forget, too, because a lot of people ask this question. I'm trying to think of the questions that my people who take my tour ask. The vines themselves that I have here on my property, they have been here and have been cultivated since 1890. The same
actual vines?
Yes, the same vines. So all my job is to go out there and to make sure that they are healthy, that they survive the winter, and I have to prune them and cut them so that they don't, so I can harvest them. If I didn't prune them or cut them, they would get so intertwined that I wouldn't be able to harvest them. We have a very special variety called Early Blacks. And basically, Early Blacks can be traced back all the way to Mr. Hall as one of the first commercial plants to be planted here and have direct links to some of the indigenous plants that grew along the riverbanks thousands of years ago when the Indians were here. I mentioned earlier about big business. Well, when big business gets involved, here comes big science. Now we have new plants that are being planted that grow a completely different variety of cranberry, which produces more per acre. And again, this goes full circle, supply and demand again.
Yes, the cran melon. They've made the cran melon.
Well, you know, those are big. You get a lot of fruit for that.
It's called the Stevens, by the way, for the record. Those are the cran melons.
Stevens
cranberries are the biggest ones, yep.
Was it Mr. Hall himself who got the idea to pour a little bit of vodka in there and call it a Cape Cod?
Actually, that was more out of the Bahamas area. And by the way, that's my favorite recipe for eating cranberries. Everybody wants to know what I like to do with them. And basically, I go back to old school and do what they did in the old days. I get a glass, about 8 ounces, fill it up with rum. Put a handful of cranberries in it, shake it around a little bit, throw the cranberries out, and down that rum, man. It's beautiful.
Ah, sounds delicious.
You know, kills scurvy and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's certainly why you're doing it.
That's right.
Well, this was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Leo, thanks for serving up those cranberry insights. We're now going to take the information you just gave us, and we're going to run it through the old Pouncedonator. Paula?
Hey, Raymond, this sounds so great. Thank you very much. If I can get a little background music right now, I'll tell you what the Pouncedonator spit out. And thank you, Leo. I can't imagine a better spokesperson for independent cranberry farmers. I could hear the love of the work in every word you spoke. You didn't even seem to notice that not being able to make a profit might be a downside to the business. We've simply got to find more ways to exploit the cranberry. And you know, Leo said something that really got me thinking. He mentioned that his favorite use of cranberries was to partially fill a glass with rum, drop a handful of cranberries in, swish them around, and then dump out the cranberries and drink the rum. That's as close to a genius marketing idea as when Arm & Hammer told you to pour Arm & Hammer baking soda down the drain every few months. There has got to be a ton of ways to throw away cranberries. After you cook your pinto beans, put a handful of cranberries in there and then take them out and throw them away. Heck, take it out of the kitchen altogether. In a steam room, put some cranberries in the water that they douse the hot rocks with to make the steam. And then, of course, throw the cranberries away before you use the water. Before you move into a new place, put a cup full of cranberries on the living room floor overnight and then throw them away. Before your kid fills out their college application, set a bowl of cranberries. Now, it needs to be full, kind of like a peak to it. Set it near the computer for at least an hour. And then throw them out and Photoshop your kid's head on a pole vaulter. What if we could get our military-industrial complex to replace bullets with cranberries as a part of the Make Juice Not War movement?
Fantastic, Paula.
He's a cranberry bog owner, and you can find his tours at cranberrybogtours.com. Thank you so much for being with us, Leo Kakunis. That was
Leo,
so much
that was
fun,
fantastic.
Man.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate the time of getting the cranberry industry out there to the general public. And when you're down here on Cape Cod, give us a visit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I will. I miss the place.
When we can travel again.
Coming up, show descriptions. Nobody's tried to describe this podcast in one sentence. Can it be done? And does that sentence include the phrase, "God damn it, Bonnie"? That's coming up right after this.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Fun fact, the name hippopotamus is taken from the ancient Greek meaning river horse. Which sounds odd until you learn that horses in ancient Greece were, like, super fat.
We now join the weekly French Trump press conference in progress.
Thank you, Mr. President. Dawn Robinson with En Vogue News. At your vaccine press conference, you talked about how we'll all be getting back to normal. Are you aware, sir, that people have lost their family members, children, and friends in this pandemic? How can a vaccine make their lives normal?
When I begin my next term, I will be pushing our great pharmaceutical companies to come up with therapeutics that cure COVID-19, even in dead people. It will bring them back. It is a medical miracle only available through moi and God. God calls me Watson, you know. We are pulling out all the stops, cutting regulations so they can move very quickly and strongly, and Joe Biden will not do this, which is why I must have another term. It's called Operation Warped Head. Next question. Next question.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tom Snell again, CNN. Sir, if I can go back to the Presidential Medal of Freedom ceremony. Here you are, losing and losing, and you actually had to read aloud this wrestler's biography. Sentences like, Dan never wanted to lose again. What was it like to give an award to a guy who can't stand losing when every time they do a voting recount, you lose again?
I did not lose. I got more votes than any sitting president in history. I did not lose. I won.
Yes, but President-elect Biden got the most votes of anyone in a presidential election.
Sir, I came in second.
There is no second, sir. That would be like saying Germany came in second in World War II.
Next question. I just want to say, do a little dance,
make a little love,
get down tonight.
All right, I'll get down. Okay, we're back. Hey, Paula, the nobodies have been emailing us stuff.
Oh, they have?
Oh, yes, they have.
They've emailed us stuff? Uh-huh.
Yeah, they've emailed us show descriptions of this podcast and... you know, the stuff that appears when you go to paulapoundstone.com, one of the best things that you see is a concise definition of our show written by some nobody or another. And they rotate in and through. And it's Paula's, it's your favorite part of the website, right?
It's a great part of the website. Yeah. People have come up with these show descriptions and they rotate. So one will be there for a few seconds and then it fades away and another one comes up. And the descriptions are so good. People have really been able to put it into words. And you know, Adam, I haven't been able to. My descriptions of our show have never been, like if I do a radio interview or something and they'll say, well, tell me about your podcast. I've never been able to do it. So I've been trying to practice. For example, just to give the listeners the idea.
Of how you summarize a show.
Exactly, of how you, they call it a log line. I don't know why they call it that, but here's an example. So here's my show description of Breaking Bad. The ongoing story of a boy who ages several years within 1 year and his school teacher father who is poorly paid.
That's good. You know, we went ahead and assigned this to everybody on the show, Paula, just so that our listeners could hear what a show description sounds like. So I've got one. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Sure. Mental illness is a serious problem. But it's a lot more fun when you can laugh at the people who have a couple of loose screws and their harried psychiatrist. It's the Bob Newhart Show.
Very well done. Yeah.
Concise show description, you see?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very well done. Mr. Carlin is looking down on us.
Yeah. All right, let's throw that open. Bonnie Burns up in the valley there. Do you have a show description?
Oh, I was thinking Lan should go next because...
Because you haven't written yours yet and you're going to be Googling stuff?
I'm not sure I got this right. I wasn't at the meeting yet. But okay, here's mine.
Okay.
Elite athletes get the shit kicked out of one another while making millions of dollars and providing entertainment.
Is that like
NFL
football? Monday Night Football?
Yeah.
All right. Bonnie, that's exactly the task. You did it exactly right.
That was very
right.
good. Yeah.
I can't believe it. You didn't say the title of the show, but you... You got that ball all the way to the 1 yard line. So congratulations.
The point is, Adam, she didn't have to say the name of the show. It really, Bonnie, you have a gift for this. You really,
yeah.
In very few words, I knew exactly what it was. That was really good. All right, yeah, Land.
There you go.
I feel bad that you're up against such stiff competition here, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, Land, you're subbing in for Tony Anita Hull. Give us a show description.
All right. Okay, my show description is an enthusiastic teenage girl lives with her widower father and frolics in the California sun.
Gidget. Huh. No.
That's Gidget.
Oh, is it Gidget? Oh,
I got it.
Gidget.
Bonnie got it. Wow.
You got it, Bonnie.
Yeah, but that's because...
You do have a gift.
That's Bonnie's answer to everything, is Gidget.
I was going
to
go with Veronica Mars, but it's not a lot of frolicking. I don't think it's California.
She used to... when Bonnie and I first started working together, she used Gidget as like a reference point for everything. She'd say, you know, on stage, it would be better if you were more like Gidget. And
wow,
I just, yeah, it was apparently something she's fascinated with. And so everything.
That's a tough note. That's a tough note. Bonnie has given me that note, Paula, and imagine how it strikes me.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, could you do that again, but a little more like Gidget?
Yeah. Yeah.
I finally had to just turn to her one day, and this is a long time ago. So I just turned to her one day and I said, "Fie, Gidget."
Fie on you. Fie on thee, Gidget.
Yeah, it was a long
get
time
thee
ago.
Get to a funnery. Okay. See, because Gidget has fun. You know, here comes something crazy, people. So we'd scheduled this show description segment. And then, wouldn't you know it, Tony Anita Hull got struck with, she got struck ill. I don't think it's with the COVIDs, but she's not feeling well.
But you know what? She's going to be better soon because I recommended to her that she fill like a hot mug, like just take it out of the dishwasher and and fill it with cranberries and put it beside her bed. And right. Then just before she had to throw up, throw the cranberries away. That was what I... recommend.
That's a good prescription. Let's see if it works. Yeah. Hopefully she'll be
so
back next week.
She should be back in the saddle. I'd say I'm going to be asking her to do things certainly by tomorrow.
Certainly. But meanwhile, Paula, we have a problem tonight, which is that Bonnie Burns has agreed to step up and read us the show descriptions, you know, to provide the fodder, as it were, that Tony Anita Hull generally does. So without further ado and a sense of impending doom, what's that?
I think she's going to surprise you, Adam. I think Bonnie's going to have a flair for it. The way she was able to boil down the essence of the Monday Night Football and the way she knew Gidget right away when Land gave his description.
Yeah, but
very impressive.
But Paula, when we asked her to do this, she said, "Oh my God, I don't see very well."
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. I haven't been able to pick up my new glasses prescription.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to have to just make the best of it.
Okay, here we go. Bonnie Burns, read us some show descriptions from listeners. Tell us who is leaving it first and then read the show description.
Oh, say who the person is first?
Yeah, that's
no,
a good
Tony
idea.
Tony never does that.
That's exactly how Tony does it. Do you listen to our show?
No, I do. She goes, okay, here's the first one. It's from Brad Bohannon.
Good.
A show where the host stays on topic about as often as Captain Crinkle has something meaningful to offer.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe that wasn't the right one to have Bonnie Captain Crinkle Burns read.
That's amazing.
How was my delivery?
It was really good.
It was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know what? I think Brad Bohannon is going to have to eat some crow after the way you read that and what the meaningful things that you've had to offer here. Highly significant things you've offered.
Yeah.
Right. And Paula, you've been pretty on topic.
There's no question. You know why? Because I'm trying to do it more Gidget-like.
Oh, yeah. That's a good note. It's a good note. Whoever gave you that note has it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one, Gidget, is from Finn from Utah. To quote the literary genius Douglas Adams, it's like having your brain smashed out by a slice of lemon wrapped around a large gold brick.
Wow.
Wow.
I didn't know Douglas Adams had ever said that, Finn from Utah, but there is your brain smashed out by a slice of lemon wrapped round a large brick.
Whoa. I believe if I remember correctly, that's from one of the Hitchhiker's Guide's books, and it talks about an incredibly potent space liquor. But I love that description, Finn.
It's a great description. Now, Al Gore, the description was based on Al Gore.
What's funny here is that I was right about the Al Gore thing. It was a sly reference.
I have to admit, you were right about the Al Gore thing. It sounded ridiculous. I mean, apparently it sounded ridiculous when Al Gore said it.
Eric Siegel was like, no.
Do you mean Eric Siegel with an H? Eric Siegel?
No, the H is his first name. For some reason, he spells it E-R-I-C-H, like E Rich.
Eric Siegel? That's silly.
No, it's Erich. Like, he's rich. E Rich is. You're writing that movie. He's E Rich. All right, Bonnie, what else you got?
Okay, here's the next one. This is from Jay Coder. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone is like a mystery meat sandwich. Skeptical at first glance, but once you take a bite, you realize it's worth another taste.
That's fantastic. Thank you,
That's
Jay.
That's really good.
And good. Jay, yeah. I think it was inappropriate of you to poke Al Gore's butt, but this description really gets you off the hook.
Different, possibly a different Jay, Paula, but we don't know that for a fact.
There's only one Jay to me.
Jay, we loved your book about royal weddings. It was really, Kennedy weddings. It was fantastic.
Yeah. It was just about the Kennedy wedding. And then he said, I do. And then they kissed. It was fascinating.
All right, Bonnie, give us the next one. You're doing great.
Okay. This next one's from Lori, no last name. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone is a hilarious competition where three intelligent, funny, and accomplished women, Paula Poundstone, Bonnie Burns, and Tony Anita Hall, team up against their capable male colleague, Adam Felber, who for unknown reasons returns to co-host every show. The women taunt him until he cries out, God damn it, Bonnie, which ends the game. So far, the women remain undefeated. Tune in each week to see if this is the time Adam doesn't lose his shit.
Oh, I love that one.
Boy, that was by a woman named Lori. And she really distilled down the essence of the show.
It really is.
Yeah, that was beautiful, Lori. Thank you.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
I am. You guys are undefeated in that. I will always get to the goddamn it, Bonnie part. Although not tonight, because Bonnie is crushing it tonight. Can we say that?
We've just cruised through the show.
Yeah, Bonnie, absolutely. And you're doing so well.
Bonnie, Bonnie, is Amy Klobuchar available to read this show description?
Oh, for the next
Uh-oh.
One?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. We haven't heard from Amy for a while.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Senator.
Okay, thank you very much, Adam Felber. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. It's like an adult gas Frida. You're not sure you like it while it is happening, but you feel so much better afterward. And this is from Anna from Portland, Oregon.
Oh my God, Bonnie, you're a genius. That was fantastic.
Anna from Portland, Oregon, that was superb. And I hadn't read it. I was just waiting to hear it from Amy Klobuchar, and I gotta say, Anna, you should have Amy Klobuchar read your work, because the combination of the two of you,
of your words and Amy Klobuchar's voice.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Not only are those great show descriptions, I'm sure one or two of them might show up on our website. We want to thank all of you. Paula, will they be getting hotel soaps?
I think they should. These are spectacular.
You
want
to choose one that absolutely receives a hotel soap? There's a lot of good ones here.
I haven't stayed in a hotel in quite a while now, but Maybe right. I can just scrape off some little bits of the soap I've been using in my bathroom and send it out.
Okay.
And because that might not be the gift you want, let's move forward. Bonnie Burns, everybody, though. Can we give it up for her? She nailed that.
Yeah,
segment.
That was...
Yay, Bonnie.
All right, now, Paula, moving on. What's going on in the Poundstone product empire this week?
Well, Adam, I have been avoiding loneliness this holiday season by making video messages for people. You can order one at cameo.com/PaulaP33. I deliver messages of Merry Christmas, congratulations, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Birthday, I told you so, and what the fuck? That's cameo.com/PaulaP33. Our listeners can go to paulapoundstone.com for gifts and much-needed distractions. I would tell you more, but Heidi!
You know, you're right, and Heidi, I promise I'll make this brief. You know, as the football season heads into the playoffs, what better way to enjoy it than with the watching the game on the networks and listening to it with the Starburn Sports simulcast featuring me and Jeff Cesario. We can't give you the schedule right now. Just go to starburnsports.com or follow my Twitter feed at Adam Felber to find out when you can watch the game and hear the live comedy.
Adam!
What?
Adam, answer the phone!
Answer the phone?
Yeah, answer the phone,
Paula,
Adam!
Paula, we almost made it through this. Okay. Hello?
Hello, Adam. Am I the 100th caller?
No, Winnie, you're actually, God help us, you're the 99th caller. Winnie, are you there? Winnie, you sound like you're hyperventilating.
I think I might be, Adam. I'm so close to winning the 100th caller contest. I'm getting to hang out with you after the game. I have to put my head between my knees. I'm getting any appliance I want from Roger Federer's appliance shop.
Yeah, big doings, Winnie. Big doings. Try to breathe.
I'm also calling, Adam, to thank you for sending the brand new crock pot to my mother. She was so what? Happy. It really took you off her shit list, Adam. You were really on her shit list, Adam. She used okay. to call you Adam Felberp. It broke my heart.
Wow, that's mean.
But when the brand new Sunbeam Crockpot came, you worked your way right back into her heart, temporarily, the way you were in mine.
Wait, what do you mean temporarily?
Well, haven't you been watching the news, Adam? Sunbeam Crockpots have been bursting into flames. It burnt her wig. The crockpot burnt her wig. She thinks you did it on purpose, and now she calls you cocksucker Adam Felberp. She's what? Very upset. When you come to get me to hang out after the game, disguise your voice, Adam. My mother says if she ever sees you, she'll crack your skull with the exploding crock pot you sent her.
Of course, I didn't know, Winnie.
I gotta go. She's coming. I can smell her burnt wig.
And with that, that's Winnie Feynman, everybody. Wow.
The 99th caller. Oh, my God. Winnie Feynman is the 99th caller.
Yeah.
She is really on edge, I think. My God, you can feel how much she wants to hang out with you after the game, Adam.
Yeah, you can, and you can be a little scared of that, too.
Well, you know, you and Jeff Cesario, you know, doing the play-by-play, the comedy play-by-play for the football games is kind of rubbing it in Winnie Feynman's face, you know.
What do you mean? Oh, because of the game?
Yeah, she wants to hang out with you after the game, and you used to say there was no game, and it turns out you were watching games.
Well, now I'm watching games. Before that, I wasn't watching games. Winnie, if you're listening, this is a new thing, that thing. And sorry about the crock pot. Hey, everybody, you can subscribe to our podcast. Just go to wherever you get your podcast and hit the subscribe button. You don't end up with a Boy Scout at your door, I promise.
Now, if you want to send us some email, enter the theme song contest, whatever, send everything to nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Once again, that's nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com, and that's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Lefelber. Special thanks to our guest, Leo Kakunas, and thanks to our house band, Raymond Horton. You were great, Raymond. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by new Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, Starland Romo. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me? Wow. I've never heard Winnie Feynman that wound up before, Adam. She's really...
Yeah, I didn't even remember sending her the crock pot, but I guess I might have. I sent a lot of people presents and...
It was very nice of you. Very, very nice. Why would you send one that explodes, though?
Why does her mother wear a wig?
Maybe she has thinning hair. Maybe okay. She likes to have different looks on different days without...
Just asking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that could be one reason.
I certainly didn't know about the sunbeam thing.
Oh, sunbeam corkpots? Yeah, they've been bursting into flames recently. Yeah. You sure you didn't know?
What do you mean? Of course I didn't know. I mean, would I send her one if I knew?
Boy.
Paula.
Starburns Avenue, a podcast network.